2 weeks ago, I told you that the end of Colossians 3 acted as like a sort of climax to the book of Colossians, the supremacy and centrality of Christ in every area of life, even our work. But I was wrong. As I dug into our text today in Colossians 4, I was really amazed to find how clearly Paul takes it even farther. He goes beyond the mundane, everyday work all the way to every area of our life. So I gladly tell you that I was wrong. And this is such a fun text today as God, through His Word, touches every area of our lives with this message about the centrality of Christ. Christ-like living in every area of our lives. Look with me, Colossians 4, and we'll start with verse 2. Devote yourselves to prayer, keeping alert in it with an attitude of thanksgiving, praying at the same time for us as well, that God will open up to us a door for the Word, so that we may speak forth the mystery of Christ, for which I have also been imprisoned, that I may make it clear in the way I ought to speak. Conduct yourselves with wisdom toward outsiders, making the most of the opportunity. Let your speech always be with grace, as though seasoned with salt, so that you will know how you should respond to each person. He says, first of all, devote yourselves to prayer. In Mark 3, we have an incident where Jesus is teaching on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, and a huge crowd gathers. And Jesus asked the disciples to have a boat right there ready for Him. Literally, to have a boat devoted to Him in case the crowd should surge forward and press Him into the water. Have a boat devoted to me meant have the boat right there behind me ready for use. That's the same word as our word devoted here. We have the same word in Acts 10, where an angel comes to Cornelius and tells him to go send for Peter, who's going to bring him the gospel. And Cornelius calls a couple of his servants and a soldier from those who were in constant attendance upon him. Literally, those who were devoted to him. See, he had some servants and soldiers that always stayed right there nearby him so that he could immediately send them anywhere he needed. They were devoted to him. So you see, when Paul says, devote yourselves to prayer, this is the idea of always being ready to give yourself to prayer. Always being ready to turn to prayer. It's like the president's top advisor or a baseball manager's treasured assistant. I'm not saying prayer is like an advisor, but I'm saying a president is always turning to his advisor. A manager is always turning to his best assistant. So we should always be constantly turning, giving ourselves to prayer. Devote yourselves to prayer, keeping alert in it, being watchful in it. 1 Peter 5:8 has the same word. Be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls about like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. See, this kind of alertness is the kind that you would need if you knew that there was a predator seeking to devour someone, prowling around. There was a mountain lion warning in Anaheim Hills this week. Apparently a pretty large and bold mountain lion was seen in a campground there. And if you were given the job of going to that campground and going around to the about 50 campsites that are there and telling everyone, hey, you've got to get out of here, we've seen a large mountain lion. So you're making your way through the woods from campsite to campsite. Every sound in the brush would probably catch your attention. Every movement would probably catch your eye. You would be watchful. You would keep alert. That kind of watchfulness. It says, keep alert in prayer. Since you're devoted to prayer, every sound in the brush, you turn to prayer. Every movement, every danger, every question, you're turning immediately to prayer. Devote yourselves to prayer, keeping alert in it. In Ephesians 6, 18 through 20, the verses that parallel these in that sister epistle, Paul specifically says, be on the alert for all the saints. You aren't just watching out for yourself and turning constantly to prayer. We watch out for one another and constantly turn to prayer for one another. He says, devote yourselves to prayer. Keep alert in it. with an attitude of thanksgiving. Paul seldom mentions prayer without mentioning thanksgiving. Yes, you're alert, you're watchful, but that doesn't make you some kind of nervous, paranoid mess. Your heart is full of thankfulness for the wisdom, the grace, the protection, the strength from a loving and a perfect God. So devote yourselves to prayer. Keep alert in it with thanksgiving. Now, Paul's going to turn to a certain kind of request that we should be constantly praying, the kind of request that we should be devoted to. He says, praying at the same time for us as well, that God will open to us a door for the word, so that we may speak forth the mystery of Christ, for which I have also been imprisoned. Now, we have to read between the lines just a little bit here. Paul was in prison. And if this is the Roman imprisonment described in Acts 28, he had open opportunity for people to come and see him. But he was apparently under house arrest and couldn't go out himself. And now, here's what I mean by reading between the lines here. It's not hard to sense that Paul felt hindered in the ministry of the gospel. That there was some frustration or at least some burden there because of the lack of opportunities to tell others about Christ. And Paul saw that problem as being a problem of closed doors. And he saw himself as being dependent upon God to open up those closed doors. Dependent on God to open up those doors for the word, those doors of opportunity. So he turns to prayer. And surely Paul has been praying this for himself. And he writes this letter to these Colossian believers, and he asks them to pray for open doors for the word. Now, I think this is very significant, because we may well feel frustrated or at least burdened by the lack of opportunities that we have to share truth about Christ. Workplace regulations make it very difficult. Living in a bedroom community where most people commute considerable distances to work means they're not home very often. Living in an area where recreation and pleasure are such a high priority, yards with high fences and a real lack of any sense of neighborhood, few community events that bring people together, it would not be hard for us, it probably isn't hard for us, to be burdened or frustrated with our lack of opportunities to speak forth the mystery of Christ. What do? Pray for God to open up those doors of opportunity. If our frustration or our burden isn't turning us to the God who can do something about it, we're blowing it. Pray for open doors of opportunity to speak the mystery of Christ. Now, you might think, well, on one hand, I want opportunities like that, but on another hand, I don't. I'm not sure what to say or how to handle different situations or what to do about objections or questions people might ask. There's some real encouragement here for the fear to some degree or another that all of us have related to this. Look at verse 4. Paul says that I may make it clear in the way I ought to speak. Paul's probably the greatest evangelist ever. And he is toward the end of his ministry. And he says, pray for me that I may make it clear the way I ought to speak. If anybody had all the answers, if anybody knew everything to say, it was Paul. And he says, no, I need you to pray that God will help me make the gospel clear. And that ought to be a real encouragement to us. God gives clarity. God gives assistance. God gives help. And even Paul was dependent upon help from God to talk about Christ like he should. So no wonder we're dependent on God. Devote yourselves to prayer, keeping alert in it with an attitude of thanksgiving, and praying at the same time for us, that God will open to us a door for the word, so that we may speak forth the mystery of Christ, for which I have also been imprisoned, that I may make it clear in the way I ought to speak. Now, he goes on in verses 5 and 6 to say, conduct yourself with wisdom toward outsiders, making the most of the opportunity. Let your speech be with grace, as though seasoned with salt. Notice at the end of verse 5, making the most of the opportunity. Now, take that word opportunity, and I think we could plug it in up in verse 3. Praying at the same time for us as well, that God will open to us an opportunity for the word. See, he's talking about the same thing here. And again, if we just read between the lines a little bit, you can see Paul thinking, I'm in prison. I'm burdened by the lack of opportunities that I have for contact with unsaved people. But I'm writing to you in Colossae, and you aren't in prison. you do have opportunities. So he tells them three important things about their opportunities with unsaved people. Three important things that apply very well to our contact with unsaved people. Number one, he tells them, be wise. Beginning of verse 5, conduct yourselves with wisdom toward outsiders. Live wisely in front of unsaved people. How many unbelievers have been turned off to Christianity by the poor testimony of a coworker who claimed to be a Christian but didn't live wisely, but didn't realize that unbelievers were watching? A Christian coworker that just lived for himself and lived unwisely and blew his testimony for Christ. And while Paul doesn't say this negatively, you can imagine that he's thinking, I'm in prison, I don't have many opportunities. Some of you have plenty, and you're blowing them because you're not living wisely. So he says, you conduct yourselves with wisdom toward outsiders, toward the unsaved. And then he says, make the most of your opportunities. When you're around outsiders, when you're around unbelievers, in whatever context, make the best use of that opportunity. Some translations say redeeming the time, which is actually a very good translation, but don't misunderstand that, because he isn't saying don't waste your time. He's saying don't waste any opportunities with unbelievers. Live like Christ anytime you're around unbelievers. What do your coworkers see in you? What do your neighbors overhear in your backyard? How do people see you treat your kids in the grocery store? What do they hear coming from your section of the stands at the Little League game? Making the most of the opportunity might mean taking your chances to share the gospel, but it might mean just living like Christ because you know unbelievers are watching. It means don't miss the grocery store opportunities, the neighborhood opportunities, the work opportunities to live like Christ in front of unbelievers. So be wise. Make the most of every opportunity, and then speak with grace. It says, let your speech always be with grace, as though seasoned with salt, so that you will know how you should respond to each person. Speech with grace is just speech that helps, it encourages, it benefits others. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification according to the need of the moment. Then he says, seasoned with salt. Though many people talk about how salt is a preservative, I'm not sure that's really what he means here. In Matthew 5:13, when Jesus talks about being the salt of the earth, he talks about taste, not preservation. Salt makes something taste right. You have to have the right amount of salt so that it's appealing. Let your speech be seasoned with salt. Let it taste good. Let it be appropriate. Let it be encouraging and helpful and right. It's like a cook who has to know the right amount of salt for a dish to make it taste right. Too little and it's bland. Too much and it's nasty. Just right, and people don't even notice. They just know it tastes good. It takes skill to properly salt food, and we need that skill in our relationships, in our opportunities with outsiders. We need our speech to be salted, to taste good. So you go back to the workplace and think of how many times Christians have blown opportunities because their speech wasn't Christ-like. Their speech wasn't gracious. Their speech didn't benefit others. Their speech didn't taste good for other people. I think these verses 5 and 6, are recognizing our tendency to be in passive mode, to just be zoned out and miss good opportunities to live the right example or speak as we should for Christ. We aren't even thinking about the fact that we are around people who are outside of Christ, and so we're careless in our actions, we're thoughtless in our words, we're unwise, we don't make the most of those opportunities. How much damage has been done to the cause of the fame of Christ because we were just zoned out. We're just in passive mode. We're not paying any attention to the fact that these are opportunities to live like Christ in front of unbelievers or to speak for Christ to unbelievers. Now, verse 2 applies to all this. Devote yourselves to prayer and keep alert in it. Be devoted to prayer because we need God's grace to open the doors of opportunity. We need God's grace to help us speak clearly. We need God's grace to help us live wisely. We need God's grace to guard our tongues. so that we'll take every opportunity we have for the fame of Christ with unbelievers. Now, it amazes me how, once again, this points toward a life that is fully Christ-centered. Paul talked about Christ-centered marriages, Christ-centered parenting, Christ-centered work. But Paul goes past that. And again, we're bringing this into our context. But Paul takes it to the grocery store and the Little League game and every place in which you come in any contact with unbelievers. You should always be watching, always alert for opportunities in action or in word to show off or speak about Christ. Don't miss them anytime, anywhere, any chances to live for the fame of Christ. Every single area of life has been covered. We have been shown through Colossians how every area can and must be Christ-centered. This is amazing to me, and I have obviously read Colossians before and studied Colossians and written about Colossians, but it's not till I worked through it for these sermons that I really came to see clearly how Colossians calls us to a Christ-centered life in every single area. You'll leave here today and go to lunch. Does Christ have anything to do with that? Does that need to be Christ-centered? Well, are you going out to eat? You'll be in front of outsiders. So live like Christ. Are you going home? You'll be with your family. Remember those verses in Colossians 3, 18 through 21? Live like that, Christ-centered with your family. Come to our service tonight at our house. You'll be around others here in the church. Colossians 3, verses 12 through 15 tell you how to live Christ-centered then. Get up Monday morning, head off to work. Colossians 3, 22 through chapter 4, verse 1. You see, it's every area of life. It really is. Every area needs to exalt the supremacy of Christ. Every area, Christ needs to be central. Every area of our lives, Christ needs to be lifted up. He needs to be pursued. He needs to be exalted and shown off. We need to be chasing Christ-likeness in every area. There's no area that's outside of the supremacy and the centrality of Christ. And this is just how big and all-encompassing the Christian worldview is. This makes sense out of all of life. This gives purpose to all of life. Everything is eternally significant. This is how great Christ is. Everything in all of our lives revolves around Him. Everything in all of our lives matters. Now, we need God's grace to go live like it. We need God's grace to live this kind of Christ-centered life. What area is it in your life where you're not living this way? What areas of your life are separated? You've compartmentalized them away from your commitment to Christ. And they're separate. We've got to bring those under the subjection of Christ. We have to start living for the glory of Christ in every single area, pursuing our own Christ-likeness in every single area. Oh, we need God's grace to live that way.